Okay, we'll call to order the March 4th meeting of the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. The first item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda.
And before you do that, could I request a motion to amend the agenda to include as a new business item proposed amendments to the sign ordinance? And I'll explain all that when we get there.
I also have an amendment I would like to put forward.
Okay.
Also would like to throw a topic as underground utilities as an item for discussion tonight.
What was the subject?
Underground utility.
Where do you want to put that on the
agenda? It could be six. It could be last one.
Okay, so.
As a new business item?
Yes, yes.
So number two.
I'm sorry, yeah, number two, yes.
All right, with those changes, proposed amendment to the sign ordinance under new business as number one item under that, and then underground discussion of underground utilities as item number two under new business.
Move to accept as amended.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Tony, second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We were just going to excuse them. Made it.
Isn't the last one in buys over at John Mackles?
What?
Last one in buys at John Mackles, isn't it?
All right, we just adopted the agenda, so we're fine. All right, next item is the approval of the meeting minutes from the February 11th, 2020 regular meeting. Again, I was not there, so I will abstain from this vote discussion.
Actually present.
Okay. Did you get that?
I was present. Yeah. You don't have my name.
Yeah, it's got Rob.
Sorry, I'll get that added for you.
No, you still have Robert Young there.
I must have copied it. I'll get it changed.
Here. Okay. Is there a motion to approve the minutes with the amendment?
So moved.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Okay. Next item is public comments. So, any public comments? All right, great. Need to come up there and give us your name and.
Good evening. My name is Alicia Devereaux and I live at 801 Alabama Avenue. I am actually here. I was pleased to see the issue of light pollution was on the agenda. Unfortunately, I have an issue with that. Our home is actually facing Alabama and it's on the corner of Sea Ray. So all of our bedrooms and our back porches, et cetera, are at the back. And then our neighbor behind us actually faces Sea Ray, so their front porch is in our back. The house sold last summer. And we went over and greeted them and everything went welcome to the neighborhood. And they're part-time, you know, it's a second home for them. And about a month after they moved in, they had changed out the lights on either side of their front door, on the front porch at the top and underneath at the door, underneath them by the garage. And they have set them on timers and they go on at dusk and they stay on till dawn. And they're like Klieg lights coming into our house. Into all of our bedrooms and our screen porch and our patio. We contacted them, we talked to them about, you know, the issue, and they said, oh, well, the next time we come in, we'll take a look at it, and they did, and nothing changed. And then we touched base with them again, and they said, I'm sorry, we want them. Those are our security lights. And we were trying to tell them that, you know, having lights on all night long basically says no one's home and the house is vacant, but they didn't really get that. And And then we asked them if they would consider doing motion detector floodlights instead, and they said, oh, we have those too. So then we offered to install at our cost, like a security doorbell, and they wouldn't do that either. So a little while went on, and I've had to install like room darkening shades, and I have to actually tape them. It's awful. It's basically, it really is. We can't go on our screen porch at all at night because it's just, they're right there. And it's just miserable. So we went on vacation in January for a week, and when we got back, the lights on the top level were off, which were the ones that were really causing the problem. So I wrote them this note saying, oh, thank you, that's so wonderful, we really appreciate it, that was great, can't tell you the difference. And they came back into town, and a week later, they put them back on. So I don't know what to do anymore. You know, we live in tight spaces here. Our lots are really small. We've got 5-foot setbacks, so we basically live 10 feet from each other. Most of us have, you know, realized that we, to be good neighbors, you know, you take care of each other and don't do things like that. I'm just not quite sure what else to do at this time. I guess I think that we do need a light pollution ordinance the same as a noise ordinance because it's interfering with our use of our property and our enjoyment of our property. And it doesn't seem that that's quite right. So I just wanted to kind of tell you my story since I saw it on the agenda. And I appreciate the time.
And you're at 801 Alabama?
Correct.
What's the address of the property?
I want to say it's 1709 Sea Ray, but don't quote me on that.
But it's on Sea Ray.
It's okay. On Sea Ray. It's right behind ours, yes. So it's a kind of a forestry pump. You can go by. It's just, you can't miss it.
Especially at night.
At night, exactly.
I believe this was actually one of the pictures that David took.
It may well have been. As we were beginning this process, I drove around town, and it didn't take but an hour to drive around town and take about 30 horrific pictures. So we may have actually shown a picture of it when we started this a couple of months ago. It's a real concern. And
it seems like it's coming up more and more.
Yeah.
And you don't want to call the police, and that's not what they're there for, and that's a waste of their services for sure.
You know, you may want to stay around for the discussion. We will have a discussion of the light ordinance. We have a few other things to talk prior to that, unless there's a motion to move that forward.
That's okay.
And we can certainly do that, too.
That's fine.
As long as you're here. But because that's item number 3 under old business, so we will definitely get to that.
I saw that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, please stick around. All right. Seeing no other folks that may be interested in talking, we will close public comments and move to old business. First item is on the agenda is the graffiti ordinance. And everybody should have received something probably earlier today, I believe it is, about the graffiti ordinance. I brought this up several months ago. And so now that we kind of finished up with some of the other things that we were doing, I decided to get back to that in the last couple days. And what I did is realize that we don't really have a big problem here. So this is basically a proactive way of thinking about if we do ultimately have a problem. So I've done a fair amount of research, including reading a number of newspaper articles. And, you know, the newspaper articles, I think, are very interesting because there are a lot of towns, for example, that did not have a graffiti ordinance. They had no problems with graffiti at all. And then all of a sudden, something happens. And, you know, I just think of one that really kind of caught me was one that a small town in North Carolina that had no problem over years and years with any sort of graffiti. They had a vacant building, and somebody came in and scrawled a bunch of pornographic type of things and graphic pictures and everything on it. They did not have an ordinance, and they had no mechanism to deal with that particular issue. They tried contacting the owner. It was a vacant property. They couldn't contact the owner. And so it was approximately 3 months. And according to the newspaper article, they had over 250 calls from neighbors driving by saying that they didn't want those things in their kids walking by and stuff like that. And the city couldn't do anything. And it took them, they had to actually pass an ordinance to be able to deal with it. So that kind of got me thinking again about the idea of being proactive about some of these things. Another thing that we're interested in is making it very simple. I searched probably 50 or 60 different ordinances throughout the United States, concentrated on North Carolina, but I did look at some in California as well as in Florida. The reason I looked at California and Florida, particularly the beach communities, is that the beach communities in both California and Florida have a real problem with graffiti. That gangs and, you know, groups of kids and things like that like to go down to the parks in the beach communities, and then they are more likely the ones that are going to vandalize and so forth. So I did look at that, and they're very aggressive. But some of those, they were 20 and 30 page ordinances, and we didn't want to do that sort of thing here. So I did look at, found a number that were very, very short, simple type of ordinances. The one that I kind of focused on for what we have in front of us was from Oriental, North Carolina. And then I kind of changed a little bit of the wording based upon what Charlotte had. And Charlotte has a pretty good one, too. It's a little bit longer than I think we wanted to do, but they had some good wording. And then I took one phrase or one paragraph from the community that had to deal with the emergency of trying to clean up a pornographic type of ordinance. Should point out that the research shows that graffiti is the number one act of vandalism in the United States. It has a huge impact on economic development, has a huge impact on property values. That one tagging, for example, will lower surrounding property values by 20 to 40%, it's been shown. So, you know, it's something that I think we ought to be proactive, even though we don't have a serious problem, but we are a beach community. We're getting more and more folks coming to Curie Beach and coming to the beach and so forth. So anyway, with that kind of prelude there, what I did is I put together, I think, a fairly straightforward, a very simple type of thing. It kind of addresses, I think, all the issues that we probably need to address. We were talking a little bit beforehand as to where kind of some of the discussions are about graffiti ordinances. I would say almost everybody agrees with a graffiti ordinance. The research also shows that you really need to do two things with a graffiti ordinance. You need to have something to identify that the offender is, the person who does the graffiti is an offender and should be prosecuted, and there should be restitution related to that. In addition, is a responsibility for mitigation by the property owner, because you could have, it's very hard to catch people who do this. They come in the middle of the night and they go back to their, you know, wherever it was. And so it sits there, but if you don't have something to kind of encourage or an incentive for the property owner to clean it up, it can sit there for 3 or 4 months and you can't deal with it. So any sort of modern graffiti ordinance has both a offender component as well as a mitigation by the property owner component. And again, I think also an emergency removal is a good clause also. Not all of them have it, but I think that's a good clause based upon what I mentioned. Probably the two biggest issues that I see being debated is how long you give the property owner the time to clean it up. I saw it ranging from anywhere from 2 days to 15 days. And so I put 15 days to be the most flexible here. But certainly you could also see it ranging down to 2 days if people want this stuff cleaned up right away. Also, the violation that's associated if you don't clean it up, again, it ranged from very high up into the hundreds down to fairly low. So again, I put a $25 per day fine for a property owner if they don't clean it up within that 15 days. Also put a few other things in terms of they have to be notified by the town, and that if the property owner doesn't clean it up within 15 days, it's the discretion of the town council to go in and clean it up and then put a lien or charge that property owner for cleaning up. So those are kind of standard ones that you see. Two of the kind of First Amendment issues that do come up in conversation is, what about graffiti that is politically oriented? Is that a First Amendment issue? Do people have the right to, you know, put anti-Trump or anti-Biden or whatever type of graffiti out there? Does that violate First Amendment issues or things like that? And the other is what is called street art, that if the property owner wants to have street art and they authorize somebody to come out there and, you know, put street art out there, should the graffiti ordinance cover that? And, you know, if you do want to cover that, and I would certainly recommend it, does the writing or the verbiage that we have in here cover those sort of things? So that's kind of the sum of what I've been doing over the last 3 or 4 days in terms of trying to put together something for discussion tonight. Discussion or comments by our eminent attorney?
I do have some comments, but why don't you all discuss first, if there is any discussion?
I think I'm
struggling to understand what the definition of graffiti is. I think there it could be, just because we say it's graffiti, it may not be that way, or someone else may have different opinions. Just because I paint my building a certain color, maybe someone else might think that is graffiti.
Right. The definition of graffiti is a fairly, there are some template for graffiti ordinances out there, and I would say 95% of the ones I look had almost the same definition, which I basically cut and pasted into the first paragraph here.
That would
as to the definition of graffiti.
I mean, I think that that's just the part that I don't want to make, you know, if there's something we do, I want to make sure we don't have holes in it so someone can challenge the definition of graffiti.
Right. No, I agree. And if you notice that one component in here is to the extent that the graffiti was not authorized in advance by the owner or occupant of the property. So if you painted your, if you authorized it and you painted your house a certain color and that's allowable, it's not an HOA type of thing, that would not be considered graffiti within this definition.
Right.
I think that also covers the street art aspect of it, that if you're going to paint a mural of a seascape or something, then that's authorized art on the side of a building versus unauthorized graffiti.
Right, and we do have a sign ordinance that would prohibit people using street art as a mechanism for advertising.
Mm-hmm. Well, we would put a definition into the ordinances in the definition part for graffiti then.
This would be the ordinance. I mean, this is basically the ordinance that was put together, the recommended ordinance
and
for discussion.
And A is basically the definition?
Yes. And some of them, you know, the longer ones, you know, when you start getting into pages and pages of ordinance, they have a whole section about definition of graffiti and stuff like that. I just didn't think that that is something that we need to go to because we don't really have a problem here. This is really trying to be proactive. When I looked at Oakland, California, which has a serious problem with graffiti, and San Diego, I looked at San Diego, and I looked at Newport Beach, who has a serious problem too in California. Their graffiti ordinances are pages and pages and pages long because they're trying to deal with every single thing that they've had pop up, and they probably have 2 pages just of definitions.
John, in your time here, have you ever even seen graffiti anywhere?
One time that I can remember.
What, down by the beach or?
Yeah, they hit a house on the 3rd and, you know, oceanfront park. Seems like one other house. Apparently, some gang came through. I don't believe they ever got
them. It's almost impossible to catch these people.
And that's kind of the thing behind it. It's not a problem until it becomes a problem, right. And then it only takes one crazy night, and it's all over the place.
Yeah, I think there's state law that would prohibit and give mechanisms to incriminate those people. Seems like the larger issue here is how quickly it's removed.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, there is a state law that about the prosecution. And some of the cities, from what I can tell, have a stricter prosecution process than what the state law is. But you're right about when I think I mentioned before when I was a council member in the city of Mission Viejo, we were about 100,000 people. And it was a lovely planned community in south part of Orange County, California. We had no graffiti problem whatsoever. And literally one night everybody woke up and a tagger came in or a group of taggers came in, and we probably had 200 to 300 taggings simply done in one night throughout the whole town. It was incredible. And we had no mechanism at that particular time to deal with it. I mean, we just couldn't deal with it. We could take it off we could send out people to clean up the city properties, but we had no mechanism to deal with it. And so I actually was authorized to write the model ordinance for all of Orange County, California, which is a lot longer than this one, I tell you. And I'm sure it's been modified since that time. But you're right. I mean, you don't ever even think about it until it happens. And when it happens, it can be very, very destructive.
And it's too late to react then.
Yeah. Two things. We've had it happen, even though it's been minor. But the other issue is, okay, so this group came through and just picked a couple houses, John, and just graffitied them?
Yeah, apparently it was in the middle of summer, from somewhere.
So, but then if it's if it's my house and for some reason I cut a guy off and he, and the, so now I'm going to be charged with.
You would have, you know, according to this, and this is fairly standard, you would have 15 days to clean it up.
Right. So now, through no action of my own, a guy spray painted my garage door. Now it's up to me to bear the cost.
Well, I don't think it's any different than if someone breaks into your house and kicks your front door in, you're not going to expect the town to replace it.
But I have insurance for that.
Well, you might have insurance for this, too?
Yeah, you might have insurance. Okay. I'm not sure if insurance would cover this, but.
Either way, when you fix your property, just as quick as possible?
Yeah. Well, it's a cost. Yeah, no, yeah. You do it anyway, I know.
The
some people may not. If it's somebody who's, some of the property may not. They may say, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Well, that's a problem. Then it hurts the neighbors and the community and the town.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, it really has a substantial negative impact if people don't clean it up.
That's really the challenge, is if there is a graffiti issue and then it's not cleaned up by an absentee owner or something else like that, it's hurting everybody.
But then we have the town can end up doing it.
The town can do it. The way this is written is that it would have to be a vote by the town council for the town to go in and clean up if they didn't mitigate within 15 days. And again, I saw two different approaches. One, it would automatically trigger after 15 days if they didn't clean it up, then the town would just go in and do it. Again, I'm trying to take the more relaxed position here, where it would actually, the town council would have to vote to have something cleaned up.
And just the logistics, so that means John would have to identify it. The 15-day clock would start at that point.
Right.
No, it doesn't start till he gets 50, till a written note has been sent to him.
Yeah, the written notice has to be sent, or there has to be a formal notice sent, and then the 15 days start at that particular time.
Upon receipt.
Yeah.
That kind of segues into some of the comments I want to make, so how about if I jump in
sure.
now, then you all can continue your discussion. I've got a series of random points. They're knee jerks because I've skimmed it once. Mm-hmm. I haven't even read it. I just haven't had the time. So some of these points are applicable. Some of these points may not be applicable. First question I've got is: does this draft ordinance contemplate a graffiti violation as being a criminal act or a violation of the code? Because those two things are very different. And if it's a code violation, then we need magic language about the civil penalties, if these are civil penalties, with respect to keep those civil penalties from going to the school board. There's a magic language you use in civil penalties so that you can keep the property. We talked about this with parking. You don't have that magic language. The civil penalties you collect are actually school board property. Related to that is, I don't think a town ordinance, maybe some municipal corporations in California have their own courts. We don't. So if you're setting up a criminal offense, I don't think you can dictate to the superior court what the penalties are going to be. Now, if you want to have some internal penalties, like, because it says by the court, I don't think you can tell the court what to do.
Right. Yeah, if I can respond to that, I think I got that one out of Charlotte, which probably has a municipal court there. And I thought about the same sort of thing.
Well, we can fix that. Yeah, we certainly provide for. But that gets to the question of whether you're dealing with code enforcement or criminal violations.
Right.
If it's criminal, the police department is going to issue a citation or whatever they do, and then it's up to the DA and the criminal system. We don't have a role in that. If it's civil, then we've got to tweak this quite a bit.
And you're talking about the offender, the one who actually does the graffiti. Because this...
This is not aimed at the offender.
Well, it has both. When you look at the restitution... an action by the court, that's referring to the offender. It's not to the homeowner.
Right. I mean, I think you can set, I don't know about restitution, again, this is all knee-jerk, but if you're going to make it criminal, then it's out of your hands once the citation is issued, unless you set up some sort of I'd have to go back and look at our parking regulations. I think we kept those. I think we divorced that from criminal, made it strictly civil penalties. And if that's the way you go, then we've got to change quite a bit of this. If it's going to be criminal, then we've got to change quite a bit of this because we can't dictate to the courts what the courts are going to do.
I think there's both in here. You've got the act of writing the graffiti, which is a criminal thing and covered by state laws already.
That's because of the language that's being used.
And then
you have to make a decision, a policy decision about which way you go, and then that will, so to speak, dictate the language that you use. But let me make a few other points. I have real reluctance of giving the any local government unit the ability to go on to somebody's property and take actions. Much more the recommendation and the advice that is usually given, and I've done this a couple of times, is in order to exercise that authority, you go to court and get an order of abatement. Otherwise, you risk being counterpunched with, and maybe they won't, at the end of the day, maybe they'll go away, but you're risking charges of trespassing and damage to personal property. So I'm very reluctant to give the town a green light based on the vote of council to go onto somebody's property and take corrective actions. The proper way to do it, the conservative way to do it, it doesn't have to be slow because you can get it as part of a temporary restraining order or a preliminary injunction, is to go to court, get that authority to go onto the property, take those actions, have the ordinance more completely provide for the cost to the town as being a lien on the property and specify the priority of that lien and how you collect it. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do. You can do what you're doing here, but you're going to have to add some stuff to make that happen.
But if I could respond real quick, because you know this language came from North Carolina ordinances. And so I never saw that. You know, I probably looked at 20 to 30 of them in North Carolina.
Well,
I never. This is the standard. But if your recommendation is, in fact, that it would be better to put language in there to get a court order, you know, to be able to enter somebody else's property to do this, then certainly that's appropriate.
I'll go you one step better. 168-75 enforcement ordinances, somewhere around there in the general statute. There is a phrase that the town can summarily abate a violation or a nuisance. And you can read that and say, okay, we've got the authority to go do whatever. Mm-hmm. But, and this may change. It's a little light bulb going off about 160D, which will become effective in next January. I think there may be something in there. But the bottom line is, you just don't want to run that risk. If you're going to be risk management, If you're going to exercise risk management on this particular issue, you want an order of abatement. I'll give you two examples. I was town attorney for another town in Brunswick County we had a man living in a notorious man who decided to live in the trailer, a tractor trailer that was parked on his property. Big history of problems between the man and the town. And we jumped through all the NOV and the first citation and the second. Didn't make any difference. So we filed a lawsuit. We got immediately upon filing, we got a restraining order saying don't live in there anymore. And then 2 weeks later, we got the mandatory preliminary injunction that allowed the town to go in and abate that nuisance. Likewise, the same man owned a notorious crack prostitution hotel that mysteriously burned down one night, and we got the same sort of thing, a restraining order, preliminary injunction, fast track within weeks of filing the complaint, allowing us to go clean up the debris from that burned down hotel. In both cases, pursuant to the ordinance that had provisions in it like we're talking about tonight, we established liens on the property, and in one case, we got $7,000 worth of attorney's fees when the man sold his property to a developer. More significantly, we got $13,000 from the United States Marshal Service that had to which his property had forfeited. So there is a way to do it, and you can do it pretty quickly, and you usually can get your money back over time. But I think that's the preferred route than...
That's fine. I should point out, even though we have the discussion a little bit later on prohibited businesses, we got to make sure we have crack/prostitution hotels listed as a prohibited use in Curie Beach.
Likewise, we need to pay pretty careful attention to First Amendment issues that you correctly pointed out with respect to street art and those kind of things. But at the same time, we need to take a hard look at the sign ordinance to see if there are provisions we can put in there. If you don't want a mural, and you don't want to pass a regulation that is regulating the content, then you go back into your sign ordinance and you adopt a new content-neutral regulation that prohibits, make sure your definition for signs would include street art mural, and prohibit that type of sign on commercial residential buildings. So there is some interplay between a graffiti ordinance and a sign ordinance. So that would take some looking at, too. And I think those are my knee-jerk comments.
What I would
request is you all go ahead and discuss how you want to proceed. If you get a consensus on how you want to move forward, then let's articulate that and give me a chance to perhaps revise this and bring it back for further discussion. That's
I mean, I would certainly make that motion, go ahead.
John, what happened on the two that happened? Did the owners did it on their own, remediated the situation?
Yes.
All right. And also, I saw you reacting to council saying that you didn't particularly want to have go on somebody's property without proper.
One thing, the county refers to it as graffiti vandalism.
We already do something similar to that with high grass issue.
Yeah, they have a whole that's
the county. The state, but the state calls it graffiti vandalism.
Not a big fan of us going out and expending town funds to clean up somebody else's property.
Okay. I was just trying to get what reacted.
The only concern I have about ordinance was, making sure that these things seem to be defined very clearly.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be enforced appropriately.
Getting back to that, and for the abatement is what we call it. You can have your ordinance provide for the town recovering its cost plus some award of attorney's fees. So then, when you come out of court, hopefully you've got an order that. Where you attach invoices and all that. Here's the cost. You can recover that. The court awards me $7,000 attorney's fees. And that all goes into the lien.
What about, because I saw several of them had very similar language as the emergency removal.
That's what I mean by abatement. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, so you got two things. One is if the property owner after 15 days doesn't clean it up. And then the other one is if it's something that really needs to be removed right away because it's so offensive.
Yeah, but again, you can call it emergency. You can call it a summary abatement, which is that statute I referred to before. But I'm telling you, it would be my continued advice that this town does not give itself the authority to go on to somebody's property and do something to their property without a court order.
I tend to agree with that. I mean, I understand that profanity and language and images that could be considered emergency, but I tend to agree with going through the process and doing it properly.
And you can do it pretty fast. I think you can get go see a judge pretty quickly on these sort of things too. So, yeah, I would recommend we table this item with the direction of allowing the attorney to come back in a month with some recommended changes.
Need some guidance that you all have to provide. You want criminal or you want to be code enforcement?
What's the most conservative and appropriate to Curie Beach, do you think?
Coded.
Coded,
absolutely.
I would imagine.
Code.
Rough to go through. I mean, if we did the criminal, that means
you don't do the criminal police department. You
that's what I say. So it would be another burden on our officers.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed it would all be civil when I think I wrote this. I didn't define it, but I think the way it's written, it's probably more civil than anything.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's a good starting point for me. I'll try to bring something back next month.
All right, great.
Thank you.
All right, there's been a motion to table. Is there a second? Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next item is the legislative update and recommendations from Mr. Eldridge.
I'll do that. 1 second, please, Jeremy.
Okay.
Just a little recap. You'll recall that the legislative update consisted of two things. Part one, changes which became effective last July, and then the big thing on the horizon, the new chapter 160D, which consolidates and rewrites and codifies in a new chapter 160D most of the city and county planning and land development statutes. That new chapter becomes effective in January. Council needs to act on it in December. PZC therefore needs to look at it in November. November is still, I hope, several months away. So the good news is with tonight, we will have finished the part one changes, remembering that we did chapter 15, I guess it was last month when you weren't here, Chairman. Tonight we're doing chapter 11 and 14, and that will complete part one, the already effective legislative changes. I've asked Ms. Chase to take legislative update off the agendas for the next couple of months as I attend some seminars and start to get my head around 160D and how to organize the rewrite of chapter 15 that the code requires to conform to the new statutes. So we don't need to have it on the agenda for the next few months, because that's when I'll start getting into it. Tonight we're finishing up the part one changes to chapters 11 and 14. Let me just go ahead and talk about 14 first, because it's real simple. Through the last 5-7 years, the General Assembly has made continued changes to subdivision statutes, which include provisions for performance guarantees to ensure that the infrastructure for an approved final plat is constructed by the developer. In other words, you approve the final plat, he gives you a surety bond so that if he goes belly up, you can finish the streets, the water, and the sewer. That's what we're talking about. In the last summer, they passed they rewrote the performance guarantees, and the PCC decided with John's input a couple months ago to go ahead and change that part of the code, chapter 14's provision regarding performance guarantees, to closely track the new statutory language, and that's what we did, and we'll look at that in a minute. Chapter 11, of course, is the building and the building inspection provisions, and what we did there was several things. The current chapter 11 has, I believe, three sets of definitions in the chapter. Two of them relate, generally speaking, to building and building inspections. The third set is specific for the special events provision that's in chapter 11. I left the chapter, the specific event definitions, where they were, when any need to pull them out. But I took those other two, pulled them out, put them in one place at the beginning of the chapter, since they were applicable to the entire chapter. And also with respect to definitions, this is already effective, but it will become much more emphasized in the new chapter 160D. One of the statutory changes coming out of last summer's session was that definitions for dwelling unit, and building have to conform or be consistent with the state building code. And you'll recall that in the past year, I was able to get a significant legal victory against Wilmington based on preemption because they're, in a similar vein, they had a definition that a statute said needed to be consistent with the state building code and it wasn't. So that's an important change. So with that, with those things in mind, if I can get Ms. Chase to go to the first page of the ordinance for 1102.030, these are the definitions that I pulled out of chapter, those two places, chapter 11, consolidated them in the beginning of that, of chapter 11, and included building, dwelling unit, but also you'll see development of the building, which is a big, that'll be utilized quite a bit in chapter 160D. So we're being a little proactive by including things that we emphasize beginning next January, but we're also being reactive in putting these definitions in a more user-friendly format and ensuring that those three that I mentioned before are consistent with the town code.
Not there.
Ms. Chase, if you could go to on 1102.040, if you could go to page 4.
That
one's you'll see that under the old 1102.030, that's one of the places where the two definitions, development and development line, were, well, we pulled them out and put them in that upfront section that I told you about, struck it out of the, renumbered the section, struck out the definitions and left the rest as it is, as it applies to permits. Ms. Chase, if you would go to 1110.040, page 1 and 2. Yeah, so, that's where the other, up on the first page, the top of the first page, that's the other source of the definitions that I pulled out, made consistent with the statutory changes and moved to the front that we just saw. And you'll see the amendment. If you could scroll down a little bit, we'll scroll down the other direction. So, right there, you'll see that. Since we cleaned up that, took everything out of that definition section, we've reserved that section.
Oh, reserves. This doesn't come in as green. That's what the issue is.
Now, that is all that we did for Chapter 11. If you have any questions about that before I get to Chapter 14, I'll be glad to address
them. Do we need to have a vote on Chapter 11 first? Or is it it's just information?
No, I think we can do one vote.
Hmm? Just one vote? Okay. Vote.
If you all agree to recommend them as provided, which reminds me, these are not Chapter 15 zoning amendments, so we do not need a consistency statement tonight.
Okay.
That's only for Chapter 15. Turning to the ordinance for 1406.030, you'll start to see the changes on page numbers on this.
Page 6.
And she's got it up on the screen.
When it's underlined, it's green.
Yeah, that's
right. You'll see on the next few pages where we struck out the old language that we had, that the code had for performance guarantees, and the new language is in green. And it simply corresponds to the statutory language. I would point out just a couple of things. Whereas in the current version of the code, it contemplates an agreement between town council and the developer, but in accordance with the new statutory change, you'll see right there under type that it's the developer that gets to elect which performance guarantee he or she or it wants to provide. And it has some examples there, surety bond, letter of credit, another form of guarantee, including cash, but it provides some additional terms and conditions if you're going to use cash. If you turn the page and go to number three, extension, I believe the initial guarantees are good for a year, and you can extend that if it can be demonstrated that the developer needs, reasonably needs additional time to complete those infrastructure improvements. Number five is consistent with what we already have. The amount of the guarantee shall be 125% of the reasonably estimated cost of completion. And the cost of completion includes 100% of the cost for labor and materials, an additional 25% for inflation and administrative costs, which you do not need to specify those. Number seven limits the rights under performance guarantees of the developer, the town, and the guarantor. There's a whole bunch of litigation coming out of performance guarantees, so we don't. That's another reason why we want to make sure our language is consistent with statutory language. But you just don't want to go there. You don't want to fall back on the performance guarantee. Be active, let's just make sure that you've got it right. And I think that's it. Any questions on the chapter 14? And John, jump in if you have any comments as well.
Do you have any comments, John?
It's a big jump.
No.
No jumps? Okay. Is there any discussion from the commission? Is there a motion to approve the amendments presented?
Do that. I'll make a motion to recommend the Chapter 11 and 14 changes to Town Council as submitted.
Second.
Okay, it's been seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, excellent. Next item, light pollution ordinance and the dark sky regulations. David, you kind of leave on this.
It's my turn. All right. I'm sorry that I didn't get to send this to everybody earlier. I had a rather interesting change in schedule this week. But I'm going to kind of just read through it and touch on some of the topics, and then we can have some general discussion, and I will try and update things so that we've got a follow-up on in our next meeting. As we've kind of previously mentioned, I've gone and as you did with the graffiti ordinances, looked at various codes from around the country and different things, and I found a lot of information on this. We've also found out there are some pretty nice grants and things available to help set these things up as we move forward. But kind of in line with the public comment we received earlier, the purpose of the outdoor lighting standard or the light pollution ordinance is to create standards that promote, you know, health, safety, and welfare of the residents of the town. And we'll do that by establishing maximum intensities of lighting and controlling glare from lighting fixtures. And so the first thing that we go into is a set of definitions that obviously, as I put this together, council or our attorney will look at. And it's a fairly short list. This is really only about a page and a half document, just like you had as well. Particularly noted, it's the glare. And definition for glare includes saying that it's a sensation produced by lighting that results in annoyance, discomfort, or a reduction of visual performance and visibility, and that includes direct and indirect glare. So if it's a glare reflected off a window or something like that, so it would directly apply to the case or the example that was brought up earlier. It defines outdoor lighting, it defines recreational lighting for sports courts and swimming pools and things like that. Quite simply, a prohibition would be as simple as this: the prohibited outdoor lighting is one that would result in glare onto an adjacent residentially zoned property. It's as simple as that. It does allow for motion-activated lights, but there's a limit of, you know, 5 minutes on lights that are not aimed directly at windows, so that you can have security lights and things like that. Basic standards for the outdoor lighting would be, you know, A regulation or a measurement of the overspill of light, how much can go from one lot onto another. And of course, that's very easily controlled with shields and other things. There's some things about talking about vegetation screens not being employed as methods for creating a shield because vegetation changes. Some other bits and pieces that I'm working on, but that's basically the bulk of it, with a kind of catch-all clause that requires maintenance of these lights, so that if something fails, you can't just go and get something that then doesn't comply. You have to comply. Discussion for the committee up here is, you know, how do we transition into this? Do we give a timeline? Do we give, you know, things like that? You know, and then how we handle violations of it, which kind of fits with the discussion we had on the graffiti ordinance, so that people could be told to fix it and then potentially civil fines or so on for those that don't. So I've got a little bit of framework. I'd like some discussion so that I can kind of clean it up a little more and follow on with more detail in next month's
meeting. Since we have a practical application, I've got your Google Earth, your house, so it's a house behind you. Okay.
I'm going to drive by it tonight.
Yeah. So you can see where her. So how would that? Let's take that as an example. So it's this house here.
Right here. Yeah.
Right there. That's shining into your back.
Yeah, okay. That would cover under glare. That would be the glare.
So this is the house here shining into the park. So basically the way I've got this worded from others is that that would be glare because it would be into your window or into, you know, something that's not wanted. And we're also talk about the trespass from one lot to the other. And there's a measurement that can be set, which is taken at ground level, as to how much light can go from one
lumens,
lot to another.
And that's lumens. It'd be a lumens type measurement.
The one that's done is it's considered as lumens is the brightness of the light at the light. This is measured as where is it?
What?
So let's say there's a specification.
Yeah, okay. It's over the specification. So this lady now would do what, like with this ordinance?
Well, that would be what my next question is how do we handle that? It would basically be a ordinance or a code violation, which would
my first reaction to this is we have to put this out with a timeline for compliance.
There's two things. First is a timeline for compliance.
But I also think you can't grandfather anything.
No, I'm definitely there has to be an amortization.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that. I think that this is very similar to a noise ordinance we have. This is a light trespass.
Yes.
I could put whatever light on my house as long as it stays within my property.
Yes.
And does not trespass or infiltrate horizontally into her property like she's telling us about, then you can't control what lights I put or anybody puts in the house. But if it stays in my property, it stays in my property.
That's right. It's trespass off your property.
If it goes horizontally, like if I'm playing loud music and I can't control the decibels of my music and it infiltrates over to her property,
thank you.
Then that's something that, it becomes an issue. Same thing with lighting. The light trespass is coming from the house, the greenhouse, over to the back of her house. So I think that if we looked at it very similar to as a noise ordinance,
yes,
it probably falls, and I'd ask council for some comments, but I think it would fall very similar to that. It's not noise, it's lighting, and you can measure that lighting, you know, in lumens, it horizontally from her back porch or wherever that's coming in, yes, you can measure that. But the lighting should not be trespassing past the property line.
So it'd be shielding you would have to put up.
I mean, it doesn't matter how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's controlled on the property and not horizontally coming from the device or the fixture to her windows or in the back porch or infiltrating as noise would.
So the definition and the measurement that I've got in here is, and it says, I'm just read this, the overspill of light originating from any lot, regardless of zoning, onto another lot located within a residential zoning district shall not exceed 5/10 of a horizontal foot candle measured at grade level at the property line. So well, it does not allow for horizontal light transfer.
It's 180 horizontal, right. You know, movement. But, you know, then again, it's the measurements in her back porch or windows is in lumens.
Right.
That's how you're going to measure the light. It doesn't matter what color the light, it's the light.
It's the trespass of the light off of
exactly
one property onto another property.
Exactly.
And that's the theme of this whole.
That's the
ordinance,
theme of this ordinance.
The whole
yes.
theme, yeah.
So can it be corrected easily? Absolutely.
Yeah.
One question I have is that do we want to make this a complaint-oriented ordinance where you don't enforce it for everybody just who does it. It's just that it has to be triggered by complaints, like a noise ordinance.
I think it has to be very similar to the noise ordinance because it is basically the same thing, and you know, have read about this and been involved in some similar situations. It does follow some of the same criteria as noise.
Right. Yeah. So the complaint would go to ordinance. Then John would have to go out and measure the luminous at that time.
Well, no,
I
think
I'm trying to go through the whole process.
Well, I think you could measure it, but if it's, I mean, if her whole back of her house is lit up, you know.
I know, but there's going to be that rare where somebody says, that's light, and it.
You have two standards when you're dealing with noise or light.
Light.
One is a measuring approach, which actually creates certain issues about calibration or using it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The other is a reasonable person standard, which can survive a lot of attacks, but you still have to be very careful about avoiding subjective interpretations, which are arbitrary and capricious. But I lean towards the reasonable person approach. It'd just be a question of pulling several ordinances and seeing, getting the right template and approach. But I don't know that you want to, that's the issue. Do you want to measure? Do you want to use a reasonable person standard?
Reasonable
Tony may have some feedback.
I hesitate going to the measuring.
Right, I agree.
I agree.
That's
just been what's in the ones that I've looked at have had a measurement, but they're also much bigger towns that have.
Absolutely, I can see benefits. It's clarity to it. It is a number, but you know, how do you? It goes back to a whole other issue: calibration. Is your device accurate? And opens up another can of worms.
If we go back to the definition of glare is lighting that results in annoyance of a neighbor, basically.
As noise would.
As noise would.
Do we measure noise when somebody calls about loud music?
No.
We don't.
Well, no, they don't?
No, I think police use a reasonable person's standard.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's going to, noise abatement is going to, noise problems are going to go to the police. This is going to go to John in a different direction.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. I don't know where we'd go.
Well, I don't see you calling the police because the guy's light's on my house.
What did you say, John? What did you say?
You are reasonable, right?
And you'll like the things that you'll show up at 10 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to have, you're going to be, once again, just right. So, it's glaring. You make a complaint on the next morning. So, that means that John would have to come out that night.
Or within a reasonable amount of time.
Well, we have to come out and actually determine from a reasonable standpoint, that's really too much light. We're going to tell this guy to take whatever abatement action he needs to do.
And how much time would we allow for the abatement?
But, I mean, that was the process we're seeing.
You're right.
I still think that the light trespass is very similar to noise, and it should follow a similar process. And
well,
I don't know how that would work.
But noise, the police can come in and stop it immediately.
Yeah.
Is that what you would want for light? I'm not sure.
Well, why would it not be any different? I mean, it's a trespass.
Well,
you
could just pull a plug and take care of an amp. If your light is 8 foot, 10 foot in the air, and you need I could see that.
Well, there's also a big difference is that noise means that somebody's probably there playing a record or something like that, where it's the absentee landlord that is creating a lot of light trespass. I mean, the problem I have is that in my house is, again, you got these searchlights in the back, and somebody takes off, they're down there for a week, and they take off for 3 weeks, and they leave their back lights on, and it's shining into the back of my house.
I think it's
unintentional, but it's...
Right, I think you're going to have that problem regardless if it's a criminal complaint and nobody's there to serve or arrest or whatever. I'm just making that up.
Right.
Yeah. You got to wait. If you take the civil approach and you issue a notice of violation with 10 days to correct, and you can't deliver it until you... If you know the out-of-town address, you can send a certified mail. They're on notice. They've got those 10 days to correct. You go back out and re-inspect. If it hasn't been abated, then the next thing is a citation, and the fines start accumulating.
Right. It's kind of like the graffiti issue.
Okay. Right. And if it doesn't work, you go to court and you get an order of abatement. I don't really know how that works. Maybe turn off the power. I don't know. But you could also make the ordinance, you could also draft it so that it's not only the absentee owner, but the user, the resident, whether it's rental or whatever.
There is another second part of this that I wasn't really going to jump into right away that can add to it, that is really specific for beachfront, for the turtle protection stuff and the wildlife issues, and that actually applies to the tenant or the person in the home at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of getting into some deeper things that I'd like to get the basics down and then work on what might be more applicable for our specific area as well.
I think there's a couple of plays here. I think that, you know, for the residents or homeowners, as long as they contain their light on the property, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, and it's... When you do shielding and use the right lights, you don't have that glare. You don't have a lot of things that you look at the lights out here.
The lights in the parking lot here are a perfect example.
Yes.
We have great lighting around this building, and it doesn't provide any glare. It's not offensive to anybody.
Then
right
you go to
here.
The fire department.
Now go to the front of the fire department.
Yeah. That's a different story.
And it's a different story. So sometimes
when you're buying pretty, it doesn't do what you need it to
yes.
do.
So we're not trying to limit lighting, we're trying to limit light trespass.
Absolutely. Correct. And I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, for a residence, or you can put that ordinance in place. For the business, you know, like the street lights and stuff, that's a whole different discussion. You
yes.
can still have the same thing, but you can start to dial in the type of fixtures you want to have.
What I have focused on in here was on the residential areas.
Right.
But we're not going to go after the businesses at all then?
Well, I think, when we did that...
Okay.
Wouldn't the light trespass ordinance apply regardless of a residential or a commercial owner or user?
It was, the way this was worded was that light trespassing to a residential area. So
it could come from a business.
Yeah.
So it could come from a business into a residence, that would be covered.
Yeah.
But if it was just lights in front of Jack Mackerel's that didn't shine into any residence,
then it's
not a trespass.
And if you remember, we did have a concern, it was a big concern with me, about the lighting on the special use permit discussion for the rental, the golf cart rental, because they were going to have it on all night and it was going to trespass on everybody. So we did limit that. So I think there needs to be somewhere along the line a discussion of the commercial side of things. But that also might be incorporated if we start talking about this being also being a historic district too. So I would kind of put off that discussion about a commercial to commercial type of discussion. But I'm all in favor of this residential type of thing, and would recommend maybe that you continue to work on it for a discussion. For our next meeting, you know, based upon the conversation that we've had.
Yeah, to refine it, I think Tony's right. Similar to a noise ordinance.
Yeah, so look at our noise
maybe
ordinance.
Some tweaking that you can have a couple days, because it might take John a couple nights to get there. You don't think
right.
so?
Oh, I don't see, you know, John riding around and making and being the police for.
Well, that's what I'm. Well, how are we going to?
Well, it's going to be complaint driven.
It's
complaint driven.
Complaint driven.
Yeah. Complaint driven. But I'm going to say my lights are fine. There's no problem. I don't know what she's talking about. Then what do you do?
then, you know.
John employs the Marine Corps.
Bethany's the enforcer.
Pardon?
Bethany.
That's why we hired her. So, I mean, that's what you're going to get. I mean, she's already tried to contact me. It doesn't matter.
Well, you know, pictures and things like that, you know, probably would help, you know, build a case to file a complaint.
Yeah. I think giving somebody a 5-10 day time frame and for the light would not be, I mean, because the difference between that and the sound, the sound is that you can, the policeman can just, like I said, turn the record off right there. And
I do think there's a time for this. This is a long-term thing. I know, you know, our public comment today, I mean, you'd be thrilled if it stopped next week or whatever. I mean, you'd put up with it for a short period of time knowing that it was going to be resolved. Sadly, it's not going to be next week, but we're working on it. So I do think it's an
issue. Just to kind of explain the process here, we're talking about an ordinance that will address the issue that exactly you're concerned about. It sounds like we're going to have to table it because we're going to have a continued discussion and fine-tuning the ordinance proposal. That's not going to happen until April 1st because that's our next meeting. Then, assuming that we do vote to forward this to the council, they would have to then get it, and then they would have to hold a public hearing. Because would this one require a public hearing?
Yeah, depends on where you put it.
Okay, so it may or may not require a public hearing, but then they would have to pass it, and they might want to have a discussion too. So even we're moving as fast as we can on this, but even the speed of government ordinance writing and things like that is probably going to be several months, you know, before we can deal with this. But if we do go in that route, and you know, assuming that, you know, we do have end up with something like this, then it sounds like you would be able to mitigate your concerns there relatively quickly by a complaint type of process.
But we're
probably not going to have anything in place to deal with this for a couple months, unfortunately.
I very much appreciate
it. 6 months already. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're working on it, but, you know, as you probably got a sense that a lot of times these sort of things are triggered by, you know, we haven't even thought of it until something happens. At least we did think of this proactively a couple months ago, but, you know, your comments here are certainly triggering the importance of speeding this along, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a motion to table this to the next?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Tony, we'll get you your second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Next one is prohibited uses. Again, we've been talking about this, you know, in terms of some of the requirements and the case ruling to have prohibited uses, then rather than saying that if it's not allowed, it's prohibited. So there's been an effort by, I think, a couple of folks on the commission here to start putting together, with Beth's help, a matrix. Is that who wants to start the conversation?
I just wrote a ad hoc list up, and Bill went and found a list of prohibited uses that were from municipal website somewhere, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And what we thought we would do is, Beth put mine on and gave the list to everybody else, and we would just make a matrix up that start putting items that you thought should be prohibited, and then mark those items
by zone.
By zone, and we figured we'd have three basic zones: business, multi-use, and residential.
Mm-hmm.
And then just instead of trying to make an 8-page, you know, just start off with those three. So you list the list of prohibited use. You would just mark where each account would, where you thought that should apply to one of the zones. And we would start looking at that list and trying to expand it, cut it down, or what
get
makes sense.
More, even more zone specific, like,
or,
you
more,
know,
or is it more zone specific?
Like R1 versus R2 and stuff like that. Okay. Beth, do you have that? Do you have it?
I've sent you each the Excel spreadsheet, and you can each change it to how you see it, and then send it back to me, and I'll make a final one.
Can we, rather than doing that, can we use Google Docs? Can you put it up on Google Docs or something like that, so as we enter it, everybody can see it and use it? I mean,
do you know
how to do it, but I mean,
So the city has no mechanism by which you can put a document and other everybody can edit it, and then that would automatically, and then everybody else could see those edits and stuff. We don't have anything here.
We can try Google Docs.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we can do it's not about Apple, it's about being in a cloud. So, I mean, we can access Google Chrome, we should be able to do Google Docs.
It'd be a lot easier than us all doing things, sending it to you, and then you'd have to enter if we could just enter it directly into
that
the
would
web.
Be, yeah.
As long as that meets any compliance requirements with document sharing and so on. I don't know if there's any restrictions.
I mean, universities use Google Docs a lot. I mean, we constantly do that.
I want to make some general comments, not about Google Docs, but about what y'all are doing. I've always complimented y'all for the town for being proactive by having an express list in light of that court ruling. And I think it's great that y'all are going to expand that list. I would argue for brevity at this first bite of the apple. I just don't want to come out of the gate with a large list of things that you can't do, because this is it's a new step, and as I mentioned last month when you weren't here, I want you all to come up with the list that you want, and then I want you to give it to me to review, so that in case there's any First Amendment issues, for example, or other issues, I want to be able to figure that out in advance. The other thing I would ask you to think about, in lieu of having an extensive list of uses that you can't have, that you can't use, I would, again, encourage you to keep that list brief, meaning that if you can generalize it and locate it in the district, I think that's good. But I also don't
like
want you
just example would be retail versus identifying all the different levels of retail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or retailing black instead of all those subparts. Just
okay.
Keep it general. I mean, go back and look at your list, which I think is 15, whatever it is, and you'll see that it's just a real simple list of bullets. For example, not use containers as dwellings. That's one of the uses. Yeah. But I also want you to keep, and Chairman, we talked a lot about this last month when you weren't here. There's an additional approach. It requires some thinking, but it may help you to keep your list of prohibited uses short, and that is allowing for certain uses, but only under specified conditions that can't be met. I think we all are pretty clear about vaping, but let's just use vape, or we'll use an adult internet. We can't use wireless towers because y'all got one and lease it. We use adult entertainment. You can have an adult entertainment provided it's not 1,500, it has to be greater than 1,500 feet away from a school. When you come up with those conditions, make sure that those conditions can't be met. You can have an adult entertainment in the industrial section provided it's more than 1,500 feet away from a school. You look at your industrial section and you see, or a church or whatever, and you see that all those things adjacent to the industrial section are less than 1,500 feet. You have them prohibited, but they can't possibly locate it there because of the geographical restrictions. So that's another way of getting at things that you don't want that maybe would create more of a red button issue if you actually put them on a list as being outright prohibited. Just another way of approaching the problem.
You know, I personally like the idea that, because if you look at our current zoning, we have allowable uses, and we, for each one of the zoning characteristics, we allow certain things as defined. Rather than making it complicated, I think, like with what you just suggested, I kind of like the idea of flipping based upon the court ruling to change each one of the zones to things that are prohibited, you know. So, but then if it's not prohibited, it is allowed. So basically we're just creating a matrix that we're going to have all these different zones, and we'll have checks by these different things that these activities would be prohibited in R1, R2, R3, and so forth. That's going to vary from zone to zone based upon what we already have and trying to accomplish within our existing zoning.
to make sure I want to say two things. First thing is making sure I try to understand what you're saying. Are you contemplating, for example, taking what we currently have, which is an upfront prohibited list regardless, and maybe keeping that or canceling it out, but under the district regulations for each district?
Yes.
Putting a subsection prohibited
list. Right, because I don't think that the town, and certainly myself, I can only speak for myself, would want to change what we already have tried to accomplish with our allowable use. I mean, it's a court order that why we're doing this. You know, I mean, simply trying to satisfy a court, you know, a court decision. But I don't think we're trying to change the character of what's allowable in each one of the zones. So what we're trying to do is create a matrix.
Yeah, I like the idea of subsections, including as a subsection under district regulations, prohibited uses for that district.
Right.
I think that works pretty good. The other thing I wanted to mention that I mentioned last month and you weren't here, you're right about the court ruling. If it's not prohibited, it's allowed. There's another test that the court approved that you need to keep in mind when you're figuring out what you want to prohibit. If the court recognized the validity of the following review, somebody brings a use in that's not prohibited, but it's not on the table of uses either. The way that the court acknowledged that you could make a decision about that use is to find the use that is addressed in the ordinance that's the most similar to the application that's on the table. If I brought in let's say we regulate, I'm just making this up, shooting ranges. We allow shooting ranges in the industrial district. Somebody comes in with wants to do a bow and arrow range. Well, it's not prohibited, it's not allowed, but you would look at the shooting range to see how similar it was, and if it was similar enough, you ought to allow it in the same location. So keep that in mind too.
That actually supports the idea of keeping things fairly general then, because if you've got the right general buckets, you're steering one or another.
But from a constitutional perspective, you don't want your regulations to be nullified by being too vague.
Okay. Is that balance?
Don't you face the same danger from someone, for example, let's just take the porn industry because we did that before, and we put something out that it can't be 1,500 feet from a school, and they very quickly figure out that that's written in such a way that you couldn't put it anywhere in the town.
No, I don't think that's
the problem. The court could challenge that as not being done in good faith?
No, I don't think so, because zoning and districts, I mean, it's all a living entity. You might rezone part of that district to expand it. You might rezone part of that district to restrict, you know, to push that boundary back so that anybody that wants to do an adult store up against that boundary by having the boundary pushed back would be in closer proximity to that limitation.
I never liked boundary regulations. I much prefer use regulations.
It's complicated. But no, they've stood legal challenges, but it's too complicated. I like the idea of coming up with a general, again, look at your current list of prohibited uses. It's general, but it provides clear guidance on what's being prohibited. I like the idea of making a section like that under each set of district regulations.
So, you know, creating a matrix and then having...
I don't know what the heck you're talking about matrixes.
Well, I think what we're talking about is on the left column, we're going to have a lot of uses, mm-hmm. okay? And then we're going to have, you know, columns for each one of the zoning districts that we have in Curie Beach, and we'll
sort
have
like
checks.
Table of prohibited uses.
Yeah, right? It's going to be a table of prohibited uses by zoning district.
Then we could take that matrix. Are you contemplating putting that matrix in the code or using
it? We already have something like that in the code. We actually have within the code a
SIC code.
Allowable use by SIC code. So we've actually...
What I would prefer is to take that matrix and go into each set of district regulations and add a new section, prohibited uses.
Well, we could certainly do that, too.
Take each section.
We could certainly do that, too. Mm-hmm. Okay. I had two questions. We don't need to discuss it tonight, but there's always two issues. One is that we may have a prohibited use, or again, let's say that you know, again, we think about an adult business. But let's say somebody starts a bookstore and the adult section in that bookstore is only a percentage. It's a very small percentage of that. The issue has always been, would they argue then that the bookstore is allowed and therefore I'm not an adult bookstore, I'm a bookstore, I just happen to sell some magazines within my bookstore. So there's always that question, I think, which is a problem. The other issue, too, is when you look at allowable businesses, because we do allow business activity in all of our residential districts, but they tend to be home businesses. And we also allow churches and things like that, too. But, and so the other issue is that, you know, we're going to have some statement that it may be a prohibited use, but we will allow it as a home business within these sort of things. Again, I just recommend maybe having that discussion next week as we kind of think about this.
We have a couple issues there. I mean, it's a carpenter business,
right?
A cabinet business, and there's a guy doing detailing.
Right. There's a lot of these.
So we
have
to figure out we
want
to grandfather and let him or whatever. So there's those issues too.
Are we going to have barbershops? I know somebody who cuts hair in their house.
Yeah. If you're taking a big comprehensive step, I would just encourage a KISS approach.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Again, I would recommend Google Docs if you could try to put this on Google Docs, because then we could all, as a team, enter data. Everybody would.
Is everyone out there comfortable with Google Docs?
I'd have to look at it.
I've never used it.
So I don't know.
It's very, very simple.
I couldn't get Spectrum on my TV today, so that's where I'm at.
What to do Google Docs, Beth? You know, you would have to set it up and then send out.
For Google, you need a Google account.
Yeah.
You use your Gmail if you already have one. But you need to be careful with file conversions, because we use Excel. We don't use Google Docs. We don't use Sheets.
I think you could put Excel on Google
so
Docs.
You can put Excel on there, but then whoever's editing the doc needs to edit it in a compatibility mode for Excel, or else they're going to convert it to Sheets. And then everybody's going to be converting back and forth, and we're
going to
lose some integrity.
If we use our iPads that we have, would that help to do it on that?
Yeah, but I mean,
or that doesn't.
It's not about the device. It's about the file.
Okay.
And just let everybody know what's going to happen is we'll set this up as a Google Docs, and everybody on the commission will be sent an information, and then there's got to be an invite. You've got to be invited to join Google Docs. That's why, so not everybody can just jump into it. It's just be the five of us, yeah.
But, and also, you weren't here. Dave brought up an issue about your foot traffic.
Yes.
Yeah, and I've been looking at that. That seems to be application-based. In other words, once it's there, you know, it's if you want to start a business, you have to say how many times. So it was all on the front end loaded, it looked like. That after it's there, it's hard to kind of put that in. Now, do you agree, or
I brought that up as a possible discussion.
Yeah, well,
I don't want to limit the small home-based business that you don't even know is a business in their home, mm-hmm. and that's kind of why I was looking at it that way.
Foot traffic is just too deep.
It kind of got too complicated as we were thinking about it, but you know. I don't want to limit the realtor that works out of their home that doesn't have anybody in
or a consultant or anything like that. All right, so I'll make a motion to table the discussion until next meeting. Okay. Is there a second? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Next item under new business is a proposed amendment to the sign ordinance. Set up a Google Docs and invite all of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we have the spreadsheet already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have that. So that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think you have on your desk a This came up in a couple, well, actually it came up some time ago, and John followed up with me as it was appropriate without me moving on it. 1540.040G provides exception for political signs within for a specified period of time on private property. 1540.040G is an exemption statute. It says the following under this section are not subject to the sign ordinance. G says that you can have a political or campaign sign on your property 30 days before early voting begins and until 10 days after the election. It goes on to say in this exemption provision that political signs are prohibited on town right-of-ways and public property. And it also goes on to specify that it can't be put within 50 feet of a polling place. So the exemption also has some prohibitions in it. The main point is this. That is a provision that is regulating signs based on content, political signs, for which there is no definition, by the way, in the code. Because it is regulating signage based on content, even with respect to the right-of-way prohibition, it runs afoul of First Amendment issues, which have been actively litigated for the past 10 or 20 years, and for which the Supreme Court has come out with recent rulings very much in support of First Amendment. The example in the memo is the 2015 decision, which really has caused a lot of municipalities and county governments to look at their sign ordinances. The town in that case had an ordinance that made distinctions between political, ideological, and event-related signs. And the court struck that down because that regulatory ordinance was based on the type of sign, based on the content of that sign. And so what you've got in 1540.040G is while it allows political signs on private property 30 days before early voting and until 10 days after, the reverse of that is political signs are not allowed on private property at any other time. That's a content-loaded regulation. It violates the First Amendment. On the right-of-way situation, by statute, the town has broad authority to regulate signs in their right-of-ways, just like DOT does on state highways, streets and highways. And that broad authority extends to prohibitions. But the problem is 1540.040G is regulating political signs or content-based regulations in the right-of-way. The third issue about buffers, not putting signage within 50 feet of a polling place, that's mandated by a general statute under the election law, supersedes any town authority, is not an issue. So backing up, you do have an issue with 1540.040G because you're regulating political signs. In the definition under the sign ordinance, you have a definition for temporary signs. We can fix this First Amendment issue very easily by bringing you a proposed text amendment that replaces political with temporary. You're not regulating content at that point, you're regulating the type of sign. You're saying that you can't have temporary signs in the right way, and that's appropriate. You're also saying that you can put, so let's go back to, there's one other little tweak that you have to make. In that 2015 Supreme Court decision, which struck down an ordinance because it regulated signs based on content, it addressed, not as part of that major holding, more as a discussion, but it provides useful guidance for our purposes. It discussed the ability of a local government to put a durational limit on temporary signs on private property. And the language suggests that that's okay, as long as the durational period is not too restrictive. The School of Government recommends, instead of the 30-10 that we've got, the School of Government recommends a 90-day durational period as not being overly restrictive. And there's one other little nuance. If you tie the durational period to an event, you run a risk. It might be more remote than the risk we've already talked about, but you nonetheless run the risk of getting into impermissible content-based regulations. For example, if you fix this section by substituting temporary for political, but you maintain the ability of private property to have a temporary sign based on time limits associated with an election, and by implication, you're almost regulating political signage. So here are the recommendations. Text amendments to substitute temporary for political, expand the durational periods of private property to 90 to 180 days, you pick the number, and don't tie it to an event. I've discussed this with John. He feels council is would be, by the way, this is driven by an inquiry by a resident that raised the issue, the precise issue of whether this violated the First Amendment. So let's be proactive and fix it. John thinks council will be receptive to it. John and I have developed, and I can bring it to you next month if you all are in agreement to move forward in the way that I proposed.
Did you say that court ruling was in 2015? Because I was actually involved in the writing of the signed ordinance, and it was certainly more prior to 2015, I think it was. And so the writing of this, I didn't write that section, but...
This is, I believe, something that was developed over the past couple of years. I don't know who drafted it.
Yeah, it's been rewritten about 3 times.
Yeah, it's been rewritten, but, you know, certainly, you know, given the court ruling, I have no problem. I personally would prefer 90 days. I don't like the 180 days. That doesn't seem very temporary for 180 days.
I would agree with that. Anything more than 90 days is not temporary.
It's not temporary. But, you know, I mean, certainly to bring it all in conformance, I think that's a good recommendation. I don't think we have to ask permission of town council. I think we could just do it and present it to town council. They'd be happy with that.
That's fine. So we're all in agreement, 90 days, substitute temporary for political.
Yeah, that's fine.
5 to 90 days.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Jim, just point of information. How does this affect HOAs?
Well, you've got an exception in this section for HOA informational signs.
No, what we're talking about is that the HOAs will have a separate contractual prohibition against political signs. Like I can't put a political sign. I'm not sure if I can or not.
No,
I'm on my private property, but you can't like in the keys.
The
you can't put
rule,
a
yeah,
the
keys. You can't. Put
you can't put the keys.
If you're dealing with restrictive covenants versus local government zoning regulation, the general rule is the more restrictive rule applies.
Yeah.
So if you're in an HOA and it's saying no, period, then that's going to control that HOA property.
Right. Okay.
John, anything?
HOA properties, private property. So.
Yeah. And did this affect for sale signs and things like that? Or?
There's provisions in the sign ordinance for
already. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I'm.
This looks pretty good to me.
Except for
this one.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly make a motion to table that item until next with the recommendations.
I would suggest that you bring it up as old business for review and report to the council.
Okay. Okay. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Last item is
underground utilities.
Yeah.
I guess this is a passion of mine, and, but I've seen where towns have taken their overhead utilities and taken the time to put on how much it improves the town. I've asked Tony to help me with this, and he has agreed. What I'd like to do is to get where we're somewhat of official status. If we go and start gathering information from Duke or from anywhere else that we're not committing the town to anything, but we're gathering information for the town to make a decision. One of the things I did that just with a cursory, just went on the web, and there was Palm Beach got $8.5 million from FEMA to put it underground. There was a town in Florida that got $11 million underground. And I don't know what the, like I said, this is just a high-level search, but there was a lot of grant money, and when you read the things, it was to take the risk of losing power on beach towns with overhead utilities and reduce that risk and also make it safer. So we may get nothing, but I think it's worth a chance to let Tony and I go and talk to Duke, do some research on FEMA. I was going to ask Craig if he could dip into maybe one of his people at the university that might help us with researching grants. And then come up, if nothing comes of it, then we haven't lost anything, but if there is something that the town can benefit by and we can see an improvement in the town, we already have a large amount, especially in the north end, we're all underground. And there's a lot of, there's sections of 421 that are already underground. So, Tony, what you want to add to that? Yeah, please.
Well, I think that also researching some funding, how some of the other towns have paid for it. I mean, it doesn't come cheap. It doesn't matter right. What size town it's all. It's just going to be based on, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. I think the questions that I personally have is how far do we take it? Do we take it? You know, there is going to be an owner component that people will have to invest in, going from the underground to
the street to their house.
Right. To their house.
Yeah. Right.
That we got to figure out how to do that, and right. That's where we can get some guidance from, like Duke Energy. How have you seen other municipalities and towns handle that?
Should point out, because I think I mentioned last time, I'm all in favor of putting these utilities underground. We actually, my goodness, it must have been about 10 years ago, I worked with, when we actually had a town manager here, there was a period of time we actually had a town manager, worked with her on trying to identify grants related to this. And at that particular time, I was aware that San Diego had made a big effort to put all their utilities underground, and they are. It's been a 20-25 year effort on their part to do it. And they actually do not require the homeowner to pay for that. I mean, they will actually incur the cost. The city will incur the cost, and it may be grant-oriented too, will incur the cost of actually connecting, because a friend of mine was on one of those streets and he didn't have to pay anything.
Right, and that's just something we have to research, because right. when you get into these situations for utilities, we're going to put up new street lights, we're going to do some beautification, we're going to put in sidewalks, it grows a little bit because...
And they're doing it street by street by street, because it takes a long time to do this.
Above the beautification, though, you've got a reliability and a safety component, which is excellent.
And even some research into Duke has talked about how they really are progressing to get more and more utilities underground. So I guess what we really would like you to do, Craig, is to go to the council and get an official status for us. I know Joseph feels about it, but so that when we are actually talking to people, we can say we're actually gathering information. This isn't just two citizens that are out there doing it. We're actually trying to gather information for the town, for them to make a determination.
Okay. I'll be glad to ask council about it.
Carolina Beach has a committee for this.
Yeah.
And let's say
that
was going to be $15 million. They backed off.
Well, like I said,
the council clearly has made it clear that they don't have the money to pay for it.
Right.
So, but I think the request is, can we have some sort of anointment by the town council to have members of the P&Z approach and talk to
investigate
whether grants available and all that sort of, with an understanding that the town doesn't want to pay for it.
Yeah, and I remember texting with Nancy. I think they said maybe between $7-8 million for us.
Right.
But there are grants out there. There's no question that there are grants.
And we don't know.
It's all, it's
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, but you think the council would allow us to, as representatives of the city, approach Duke and...
I'll let you do whatever, but I can go okay. first.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
I'm going to need
okay.
two more.
All right.
All right, excellent.
All right.
So
thank
I'll,
you all.
I'll,
I appreciate
I'll,
that.
I'll go ahead and raise
all
the
right.
issue. All right, all right. Yeah, are there any other member items?
Oh, and by the way, Tony and I are working on it, but anybody want to...
I will check for grants because yeah. we've got access to some databases. I can check for grants on yeah. keyword searches. Yeah. So
that's a great idea.
Any member items? Yes.
Anyone planning on coming to council meeting this month?
It's a fairly big one because we're going to talk about the HPC stuff and everything like that. So I do plan
Thursday
on being
night.
There. What's
when
that?
Is it? Next Thursday night.
Next Thursday night, okay.
There was no representative in the last two monthly meetings. That's why I asked.
Not for the last one, there wasn't one, but I
one
came.
The one before that either.
Okay.
So you're talking about the 12th?
But all I'm saying is somebody's not going to be there
because
you.
No, I'm planning on being there because we have stuff to present. Yeah.
If somebody's not going to be at any of the meetings, let me know. That way.
I try to go to the meetings if we're presenting something, but you know, if there's nothing to present, I was out of town last.
John, I usually make them all, but with the illness, I'm just getting back on my feet. So.
Yeah. And the other thing, I'm pretty sure the mayor got a complaint about a political flag on the beach trend, so you might want to bring that up at council meeting when you talk about the political sign ordinance.
A political flag on what?
There was a gentleman here talking with the mayor. He owns an oceanfront home. So people on the weekends last summer were putting a huge political sign in their area. And the way to be spotted, you know, they were at G Avenue, look for this. And he did not care. It was not the
content.
Candidate that he cared about. He just did not want politics on the beach. Because he sees, especially as the...
Well, that raises another whole issue for our attorney because...
First Amendment.
Yeah.
Well, Andy's already researched it, and there is a way we can limit that.
Okay.
Because it's state property.
Because it is state property,
yeah. It is state property. And he just didn't want to turn into, well, here's a flag for one candidate or a banner, and then somebody says, well, I'm going to put up my flag against your opponent, and then...
I'm going to put up a bigger flag for mine.
Flag out there a month later.
Yeah, I think we're likely, as the upcoming election, to have a lot of these issues pop up.
It's going to be heated.
Yes.
There is one other thing. Noticed and talked to John about it, but just to let you all know, the golf cart people were using that for storage, which isn't really in our permit, but they're stacked nice and neat, and it's just there. I didn't know if anybody else had noticed it. And I think we're okay with it.
They also have a golf cart in the front corner with a flashing green light all night long as an advertisement.
That night?
Which is prohibited.
Yeah, that's prohibited. That's not allowed. So. Okay.
So that's, I guess you're all going to take care of that then.
I'm very familiar with all of it.
I'll send them a video.
Okay, all right. Well, I
all right.
Is the video online? Can we all look at it?
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. All right. Very good. And I will be there on Thursday, next Thursday.
So.